Mini episode 806 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 805. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross are coming at you to break down one of the most sacrosanct of all American holidays, Championship Sunday. I talk about this every year. This is the day for the true football fan. We all go to Super Bowl parties and have to deal with casual fan airheads who will ask you stupid questions about the game, people who don't really know or care if the ball is pumped up or stuffed or whatever the case may be. But Championship Sunday, this is purity. This is a time for football fans to gather and congregate. I will be having my usual bash over at Casa de Riccio and watching the games and loving it with my friends. And it's just a great occasion. And I have to say, I'm going to draw a parallel here, Kyle Ross, because we have had absolute crap, absolute shite football games for most of the playoff season foisted upon us. The Sunday of the divisional round, can't really complain about that, even if I didn't like the outcome of the late game. But as far as the action goes, at least it was there. But up until that point in time, it's just been really, really, really kind of horrible. Again, I look at it, I'm going to draw the parallel here. We are recording this on the eve of one of the grandest things that happens in American life, the peaceful transfer of power in our constitutional republic. Kyle Ross, this Championship Sunday, we're going to make football great again because these are two great matchups.
Kill me now. Just kill me now. You know, I am sitting here in my home for now, surrounded by boxes. This will be the last night here, my wife and I, my beautiful wife and I, if she ever listens to this, probably won't, but I'll throw that in just in case. And she is very beautiful, for the record. I'm not just saying that. But we will be spending the night here at the whole place. She's called home for almost 10 years. Me, almost 5 now. We're moving tomorrow. Sadly, not out of the country, but we are moving nonetheless. And thank God we are, because I will not be watching any television tomorrow because I will not have access to it. But hopefully, I have some access by Sunday because I'm looking a lot more forward to that. I don't know if under the new administration, all of a sudden, you know, all the hits to the head will all of a sudden become legal again, because I know science, we're going to do away with that. So I assume unnecessary roughness will no longer be a penalty under the Trump administration. You know, I'm sure put a skirt on guy will be you know, having a wonderful Sunday. But, yeah, should be good games. I think, in all honesty, if we can get to the football here before I alienate half of our audience, we probably have, in my opinion, I thought about this after the results Sunday, the four teams, I'm not sure if they're the best four teams, but they're the four teams certainly that have the highest ceiling. Would you not agree with that?
I think so. I think they do. And by the way, just a side note there, while I wish you and your wife the best in your new place, it's another pompous liberal that I'm a lot more excited is going to be moving tomorrow than you guys, to be honest with you. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
You don't liberal, see I'll tell you what, Kyle. I'll tell you what. If Barack Obama was half the liberal you feared he was, you'd have a real reason to be scared, is all I got to say.
I'm sorry. Let's proceed with the analysis. You're right about
this. What did my main man, Killer Mike, say? You can what do you say? You summed up call president socialist, but Palin and Pelosi, they both gonna have you broke as shit. Amen, brother. Amen.
That's that kind of poignant political analysis we get from the rap world, Kyle Ross.
I'll tell you what, man, you got to get into the rap game. I love the rap game.
I've got a friend who's dabbling at the edge of that scene, but that's probably all I should say about that right now.
Yeah. You know, how did I know that, of all people I know, Rick Morris, I have a friend who kind of dabbles in rap. Yes, well, like, that's the most Rick Morris comment I've ever heard in my entire life.
Well, and Kyle, somebody you know also, too, from our old SPN days. Not as well as me, but somebody you knew. I'll just leave it at that.
Belfie, I know that.
Oh, no, it's not. I can't imagine old boat shoes breaking out the old beatbox or anything like that. No, sir.
Definitely not any Joe Lindway either. He's more of a David Allan Poe guy.
Lindway is like the whitest cracker I've ever known, so no, it's not him either. Joe Lindway, I love him to death. He defines cracker as cracker, but it ain't him. So
yeah.
I'm not going to confirm or deny anything beyond that. But yeah, these matchups this week, and again, you and I, to whatever extent, saw this coming as far as Green Bay and Dallas. We at least had them covering on that. I last week was 3-1. I believe you were what? Were you 1-2? I think.
1-2, yes, because unfortunately Green Bay, while I said I kind of like them, I chose to go with the under instead, and that went down in flames late.
Yeah, and in looking at that game there, they really, again, staked a claim to, and we'll be talking about this as we get into the game, the opener of the one on Sunday, staked a claim to being a half of what could be the most explosive NFC championship game in history, at least that's with the opening total. We'll tell you if you go by that, but a real sort of contrast, mirror image kind of a deal here with Green Bay and Atlanta, the wide open offenses. Atlanta recently having been compared to the greatest show on turf. Green Bay doesn't play on turf at home, but they're sort of in the same kind of league. And then across the way, New England and Pittsburgh, two franchises who have been here repeatedly over the years, traditional powers, again, a kind of one-sided rivalry in the playoffs historically, but a real sort of battle on both sides. It'll be interesting because it's going to be a real contrast when it gets to the Super Bowl, I think. You're going to have that traditional power coming out of the AFC, and not that Green Bay is not a traditional power, but Green Bay right now, they play in such a wide-open, full-throttle kind of a deal right now. This is sort of peak Aaron Rodgers as far as how they're going. And it will make for a very interesting contrast in the Super Bowl. But, yeah, on Championship Sunday, two like sort of teams, at least stylistically, facing each other in each game.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is, you know, maybe me more so than you have really kind of struggled to come to grips with, you know, some of the teams that made the playoffs this season. You know, I was down on a number of them. Those teams are all gone now. And it's kind of funny, when you go back to our preseason picks, both of our Super Bowl picks are still alive. You know, I believe your complete Super Bowl is still alive. Didn't you have New England Green Bay?
I said Packers over Patriots in the Super Bowl. And I will tell you,
well,
FDH Lounge dignitary, fellow original dignitary Chris Galloway was giving me the business early to mid-season because he was predicting the forecast. He was forecasting the downfall of Green Bay this year, and he was looking a lot more right than I was through about the first three-fifths of the season, and then it's been a different story since then. So, yeah, both mine are still in it, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I had Pittsburgh and Seattle, who's still out of it, but, you know, I had three of the four conference finalists. I think New England-Pittsburgh is the AFC championship game a lot of people anticipated coming into the year. And then, you know, Green Bay is certainly there every year with Aaron Rodgers. Atlanta, I guess, the only surprise, but when we get into that game, you know, they may be the team to beat moving forward, ironically. So it's funny you mentioned, I just wanted to throw this in there, you mentioned how quote-unquote bad the games had been through a weekend and a half. I was actually kind of enjoying them because at that point I was 4-0 in the playoffs. Then I went 0-2 the day the games were good. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd rather, you know me, based on my profession, I'd always be right. I'd rather be right than entertained. I'll say that.
Well, yeah.
And
you've got more right on than most of the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, and you've got a chance to still get your Eaton 3 playoff run, right? I mean, if you're sitting at 6-2, as long as you don't shit the bed, as long as you don't shit the bed Sunday and go 0-2, you'll have a chance. Or you could clinch it if you go 2-0.
I'll have a chance. Yeah, going into the Super Bowl, I can still make it happen. I can still – that would really, really, really be something if I managed to get above 52.4% for the entire season at the end. Because, again, starting off as slow as I did, I've never been above that point this year. Last season, it was a different kind of a thing. I got above it late season, and then it was just sort of a maintenance deal from there, managed to carry it through the playoffs. I have been in the midst of – I'm not going to quite compare it to the Packers because they've been hotter than I have, but sort of a similar kind of a deal if you look at the trajectory of it, of when I've heated up. And 6-2 through the playoffs, that's got me right there. I needed to go 8-3. So, yeah, as long as I don't lose both of them Sunday, I go into the Super Bowl with a chance to get there. And, you know, on the shoe being on the other foot, I hit both of them Sunday. It doesn't matter what happens in the Super Bowl. So, you know, I'd like to be above, like, 52.6 or whatever I would nose in at. I mean, I'd like to be better than technically profitable. So I feel like there's still something on the line just so I could pad my total. But, yeah, I'm excited about that, but again, the lines for these two games, I don't know what you think, but I'm looking at it here. I mean, in particular, the one game, I'm sort of going back and forth on who I think is going to win, and that's going to kind of push me which way I'm going to go as far as taking the points or not, but these lines look like they're tough to decipher for me.
They're tight lines. There's not been that much movement, really, during the week on sides or totals. I got to be honest with you. I'm struggling a little bit on these. I'm not going to mock anyone for picking any of the four sides, certainly. I think, you know, as I said earlier, these are the four highest ceiling teams in the league. You can make a case that they're the four best teams in the league. That's not always the case at this stage of the game. But, let's get into it. You know, first game, you referenced the total, historical total. Could close as the highest total for any NFL game in history. And you can go ahead with your usual intro there.
That is remarkable for that to be the case because it opened at what, 60?
It opened actually, I think, at 58.5, like in Vegas.
Okay.
But yeah, I think offshore started showing 60 right away, and it's pretty much stayed there.
Okay. All right. Well, that
it would have to be. I believe I'll look it up again to see what it was. I know that the game was a 2000 regular season game between the Rams. That was the year in between Super Bowl appearances for them. Against the kind of the early T.O. Niners. And the game just barely stayed under, but I can't remember if it closed 60.5 or 61. I'll look that up here while you kind of go over the announcers and whatnot, and I'll have
It's very apropos that we're doing that, because I'm going to reference the 99-01 Rams and talking about these two teams because that was some of the research that I did as far as the comparison to these two offenses, and more to the point, the defenses, how good the defenses have to be the rest of the way here. But, yeah, setting it up, it will be the last ever game at the Georgia Dome, 3:05 Eastern time, Sunday afternoon, the NFC Championship, the 12-6 Packers at the 12-5 Falcons, first time they've ever met in the NFC Championship game, although not in the playoffs. The A-team for Fox of Buck, Aikman, Andrews, and Myers on the call here. Green Bay is getting 4.5 on the road here at this point. That's what it opened at. It bumped up to 5. You can still find it 5 in some places, but 4.5, it's been kind of steady right in there. Looking at the rankings for the two teams here, the FDH power ranking for these teams here, Atlanta coming in at 4, Green Bay at 6. Strength of schedule based on the FDH power rankings. Atlanta with the 22nd strongest schedule this year, Green Bay 16th. And looking at impressiveness of victories, Atlanta 9th, Green Bay 7th. So a lot of narrowness in a lot of the numbers as far as the margins go. Passing offense yardage, Atlanta 3rd, Green Bay 7th. Rushing offense yardage, here we start to see more divergence. It's Atlanta 5th, Green Bay 20th. Pass defense, Atlanta 28th, Green Bay 31st. Not much divergence because they both suck. The rush defense, Atlanta 17th. And Green Bay 8th. A little bit more divergence there because Green Bay, and particularly if you think back to the beginning part of the year, they were the best in football until Dallas destroyed them. So it's kind of been a tale of two seasons for them, but it averaged out to 8th overall. DVOA for these teams, Atlanta 3rd, Green Bay 7th. Offensively, Atlanta 1st, Green Bay fourth. And then Atlanta 27th defensively, and Green Bay 20th defensively. But a couple other notes here too, as far as these teams go. This is the seventh appearance on Championship Sunday for Green Bay, the fourth for Atlanta. What's an odd kind of a thing, Kyle, is that you look at it, and it's been kind of not necessarily even intervals over the last 20 years, but 1998, we've bemoaned this on a show previously, that they played spoiler to the Vikings and deprived us of that awesome Vikings-Broncos Super Bowl. 1998, 2004, 2012, 2016. Every one of those championship games had a different head coach. Matt Ryan, one of the only points of commonality, and then I guess Julio Jones, and you could find some other players where there's commonality between 2012 and now. But what's interesting is you don't tend to find this as much. For a team that's been here four times in the last two decades, you wouldn't think there'd be as many Vince Russo resets as there have been along the way, which we have really seen with the Falcons. But Green Bay, again, different story for them, because we're going to talk about this a little bit more so with New England when we talk about their historical thing in AFC championship games. Green Bay really following the same trajectory. Now, they had that great streak in the 60s, of course, but then nothing really to speak of until the 90s. New England really didn't have much before the 90s except for the time that they had blown out by the 85 Bears in the Super Bowl. But for Green Bay, it was Favre into Rodgers. For New England, it was Bledsoe into Brady. Not necessarily making a comparison of the four quarterbacks, but the structural dynamic of the Packers and the Patriots over the last 20-plus years, that's really how it's kind of played out. That, and they actually ended up meeting in the Super Bowl, of course, in 1996, the one time that Green Bay had won since the 1960s before the win with Aaron Rodgers a couple of years ago. So just an interesting kind of thing in tracking the two teams and how they got here. The only other note that I had in this to kind of set this up is we've heard people making comparisons recently to the greatest show on turf, the Rams of 99 to 01. I looked at it this year. Green Bay, 21st in defensive points allowed, Atlanta, 27th. What did the Rams do those 3 years? 1994, they were only fourth in points allowed, a much better defense than we remember them being. We tend to remember them being all offense. And seventh in 2001. What's interesting, Kyle, that 2000 season that had the sky-high total for that game against the 49ers, 31st out of, at that time, 31 teams in the league in defensive points allowed. So it was a real donut hole there. So you look at it.
Yeah.
The 99 Rams won the Super Bowl. The 01 Rams came very close, should have, with big favorites, came very close. And then, of course, the 2000 Rams didn't even make it there. So these Green Bay and Atlanta defenses statistically have a lot more in common with the 2000 Rams rather than the 99 or the 01 ones. So a little bit of a hint going forward on what to expect in the Super Bowl and why neither of these teams should necessarily be favored when one of them makes it there. But that's one of the things that, to me, makes it a critical component in this game. And I'm gonna wait to give my pick until you start talking about your thoughts here. I've got it in mind, but I'm going to wait to say it. But I'm looking at defensively. Which one of these two teams is less putrid? And that may tip me in the direction of where I'm going to go.
Interesting way to do it. I don't think the defense, either defense, is going to win this game. I think it's going to be which offense
right.
is more prolific. Quite frankly, not,
sure.
you know, and I mean, obviously that's going to coincide with maybe one, you know, you could say, okay, maybe one of the defenses stunk, but the bottom line is it's going to come down to the quarterback and the offenses to win this game. All right, I looked it up. That total for that Rams-Niners game in 2000 was 61.5. It is the only NFL total in history to close at 60 points or higher. Very interesting here. There have been seven games since 2003, one of them a playoff game, Saints-Lions several years back in the wild card round, that have had a total of 57 or higher. All seven went over the total. So I'm sure the public's going to be on the over here. There hasn't been a ton of movement, and it's not an overwhelming amount of public money coming on this total. It looks like when I look at the percentage, it's roughly two-thirds of bets have come in on the over in this game. The numbers remain pretty constant. You know, I see some 60 and a half there, but pretty small move. So, you know, that's where it is with the total. As far as the side goes, the AFC game I really struggle on, but, you know, I actually was pretty confident in this one. I kind of made up my mind pretty early, and I'm on Atlanta here. I think at home, this offense is underappreciated. I know Seattle did not have Earl Thomas, but my goodness, I mean, you know me. I followed that Seattle team about as closely as anyone outside of the city of Seattle for the last 5 years. I have never seen them beaten that badly ever as they were last week. It wasn't close. Atlanta just ran them off the field. The offense could not be stopped at all. And, you know, I can't help but think, and you know this, you can confirm this is the way I felt because I was texting you, man, did Green Bay hold on for dear life last week. I mean, they got that big lead. Prescott threw that interception. I just feel that when I watched the two games, Atlanta was dominant from bell to bell. Green Bay had that ridiculously hot start and held on for dear life. In Atlanta, I'm siding with the Falcons, and I'll lay the points.
I'm going to just pick a few nits on the Falcons game here on that. I generally agree, but first of all, and again, I said it was fluky at the time, so I'm not going to read too much into this, but Carolina did the same thing to Seattle a year ago in the playoffs. Now, I think it's fluky when you give up that many points that early on and you kind of get drummed off the field that way. Atlanta did it in a more methodical way, if you will, beating them down, pulling away, and I think that even though Atlanta's margin of victory was smaller, it was more impressive because it was less fluky. But it's happened before with Seattle as far as all of us saying what happened there because it was only a year ago. The other thing is, like, in terms of a defense getting the stops, that's more or less what I'm looking at here. It's certainly not going to be a defensive battle. It's not going to be anything close. I actually think it's going to go over the total. I'll be Joe Public on that one. But critical stops, key places, which defense is better positioned to do that? And one of the things that gets lost in what happened on Saturday was that first drive down the field by Seattle. And I understand the first 15 plays, most teams script them, whatever. We tend to forget how effortless that was. Seattle blew through them like diarrhea through a gut, Kyle Ross.
Disgusting. If you want to compare those games, though, like the Carolina game last year for Seattle, Seattle got back in that game. They never got back in this one against Atlanta.
True.
That was the difference between those two games. And when you that one drive, they didn't look so good. And it's not a great defense by any stretch of imagination. Other than Vic Beasley's ability to get to the quarterback, this defense doesn't bring a whole heck of a lot to the table. But they did a pretty good job shutting them down afterwards.
They did.
And a lot of that was Seattle's offensive line is very, very bad. I mean, very bad.
Right.
Green Bay's will present, you know, I think more resistance, but that first drive, it was a little scary how it looked, but the offense just came right back and never stopped. And, you know, you got to remember Green Bay's defense ain't that great either. I mean, they couldn't stop Dallas in the second half at all.
Well, and they've suffered injuries. That defense is even worse than normal here. Sam Shields not in there. Morgan Burnett left the game. He got hurt. Demarius Randall played but wasn't anywhere near 100% because of his foot. So there's some of that going around. I'm going to diverge on your pick here. And with the 4.5, I'm going to go the other way with Green Bay. Part of this is me being a bitter clinger. I picked them to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year. And, again, I was ready to bail on them in October with everybody else. Hell, even November. It took them a long time to get going. But getting 4.5 in a game that I think is kind of a coin flip, I'm going to say Green Bay 34, Atlanta 31. I think it's going to go over. That's how I'm looking at how it's going to break down, Kyle. I certainly wouldn't be shocked if the Falcons won and covered. Both of these games, like you said, could have any range of possible outcomes. But that's how I see it going. I'll take the points.
Okay. Green Bay, I should point out, is a public dog. Now, I don't know if you got a chance to read on this. It was fairly well publicized on ESPN.com and the usual sites. Sunday was as bloody for the books as any day in recent memory. It was actually one of the worst weeks in the history of the sports books because that Clemson-Alabama game was a disaster for those on the other side of the counter. And then both Green Bay and Pittsburgh winning outright was the absolute worst outcome they could have. I bring this up because Green Bay is a public dog. They're actually getting about 2-1 the ticket count, which, you know, we go through this all the time. The public typically is on the favorite. So it's unusual to see that high volume on the dog. But because it's Aaron Rodgers, because of the Packers, I'm not shocked considering how they're a more high-profile team than Atlanta. This does not surprise me. We should also point out, and this is, I guess, more to my side, I know it didn't look like they missed him last week, but Green Bay still doesn't have Jordy Nelson.
Right.
And that has to mean something, doesn't it? It has to.
Now, as we're recording this on Thursday of this week, not ruled out yet for this week, my guess is with one of them big old flak jackets, he probably goes, but is probably more of a decoy. So I'm guessing the truth is going to be somewhere in the middle. I don't think he's going to be effective, but if they make Atlanta account for him at all, you know what I mean, and throw it his way at least once or twice early, it could have the desired decoy effect.
Okay. Right now, you said we're recording this on Thursday here. I am looking at a picture online of that Tool, Adam Schefter, and it says over his Tool face, Jordy Nelson is, quote, a long shot to play. Now, there's nothing I would like more than for that Tool, Adam Schefter, to be wrong, but, you know, that's at least, you know, what I'm seeing right now.
Okay. I stand partially corrected, and I will, of course, I'll wait to get the verdict from Black Adam Schefter on Facebook, and we'll see what his verdict is on whether he's going to play or not.
Good grief.
Big fan of Black Adam Schefter.
Yeah, you always do like his posts, do you?
I do indeed.
Don't you?
I do indeed. You see that happening quite a bit. All right, so you and I diverge on the first game. We'll see about the nightcap. The AFC Championship, it's the 13-5 Steelers at the 15-2 Patriots. 6:40 Eastern time from Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts on CBS. The CBS A team, of course, of Nance Sims-Wolfson and, for whatever reason, Jay Feely on the call here. This is a game where New England is laying 5.5. It had bounced to 6 at one point, but it has settled in at 5.5. Looking at going inside the numbers here with these two teams, final FDH power rankings in the regular season, New England 1, Pittsburgh 3. But for the strength of schedule based off of the power rankings, adding up who everybody played, New England 32, Pittsburgh not much better at 26. Impressiveness of victories, New England had the best record in the league, but only 20th in impressiveness of victories, and that's a metric that is half points on victories, half points on strength of schedule. So you got the best record in the league and only 20th in impressiveness of victories. That's tough. 16th for the Steelers. Passing offense, New England 4th in yardage, Pittsburgh tied for 5th. Rushing offense, New England 7th and Pittsburgh 14th, even with Le'Veon Bell in there for most of the year. Pass defense, New England 12th, Pittsburgh 16th. Rush defense, New England tied for 3rd, Pittsburgh 13th. DVOA, New England 1st, Pittsburgh 5th. And offensively, you had New England 2nd and Pittsburgh 8th. Defensively, New England 16th and Pittsburgh 11th. Looking at these two teams here, again, number of times on Championship Sunday, the most appearances that there's been in for the AFC, Pittsburgh with 16, New England is next with 13, and these teams are tied with Denver for the most wins on Championship Sunday at 8. So one of these two teams is going to pull ahead and get 9 victories, of course, on this stage. New England, yeah?
This is what? New England's 6th straight time being in the game, I believe, which
First time ever.
Yes.
Yeah, they beat
the Madden Raiders. They beat the Madden Raiders, old Mark, last weekend, to get here.
Exactly.
So, 6 straight times.
People don't tend to think about them as far as their consistency in the 70s, because essentially they were the James Ellsworth of Championship Sunday in the 70s. They only stuck through that one time, got that one victory to make it to a Super Bowl. They were 1-4 in that stretch, but you are right.
And ironically, they always lost to the Steelers.
That's right. And then they beat them when they did go. So that was weird how it happened back in 76. I think the Browns get an assist for that, thanks to Joe Turkey Jones doing what he did to Terry Bradshaw, one of the great moments in NFL history. But now this is what's funny. Like, we think of Pittsburgh as being in this game all the time, but five times between 2001 and 2010, including those two losses to New England, haven't been there since 2010 because New England's streak started the next year. So this is the first time Pittsburgh's been back there since New England's streak of appearances has started. And, again, this is a thing where, unlike in the NFC game where these teams, they met in the playoffs a couple of years ago and Green Bay blew out Atlanta, but that doesn't really factor into what's going on here. And then Atlanta taking the measure of Green Bay, playing them much more recently. But with these teams, it's a storied kind of a thing. It goes back over a period of time that Pittsburgh has not been able to make it to the Super Bowl when New England is standing in their way. Much to my annoyance, the three times the Steelers made it to the Super Bowl in this millennium, somebody else basically fluked out against the Patriots, and the Steelers never had to go through them. So good old Ben Asterisk is going to have to prove something here for once in his life
actually
go through New England to make it there. Well, again, he doesn't have Mark Sanchez to fluke out a victory and ruin the chance for New England to take out the Steelers. And again, as much as I hate the Patriots, that tells you something when I'm rooting for them against the Steelers. Yes, I am a Clevelander, ladies and gentlemen. But I look at this game, and again, the two teams having a lot of the same strengths and a lot of the same weaknesses, not completely across the board, but a lot of the same ones here. I'm going to take New England laying the points because I think, again, that burden of victory is such that that burden of proof, rather, with Pittsburgh here. Going up, doing it at New England, that's something consistently they've not been able to get done. I think they've won up there like once, and it was the Matt Cassel year in 2008. So Pittsburgh, that's been their kryptonite over the years. It has been. Every time that they've managed to do anything, they haven't had to go through New England, and it's been that asterisk on them. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm taking the Patriots laying the points.
Wow, we're going to disagree on both games then.
Okay.
I'm taking the points here with Pittsburgh, and I'm going to go to this. Last week, we need to talk about this game, okay, the Steelers-Chiefs game, because
okay.
I texted you many times during it and how disgusted
yeah.
I was that I took the Chiefs. Wow, were they exposed last week, in my opinion. That game was not – I don't care what the final score says. That game was not close, ever. Pittsburgh settled for six field goals, but they moved the ball, you know, until they got in the red zone, really at will. And that was kind of emblematic of the Chiefs' season. I know you and I – kind of butted heads a few times on the Chiefs defense, but, and there were person at various times during the year that they had key personnel out, but they were real bend but don't break Kansas City, I thought personally. And it's interesting because New England is the same way. They're number one in scoring defense. People don't talk about that a lot this year, how they're leading the league in that department, but they're just outside of the top 10 in yards, which, again, indicates bend but don't break. Yeah, the Chiefs were able to do it to the Steelers last week. Yeah, Patriots have always been Pittsburgh's kryptonite. But is Pittsburgh going to settle for all those field goals 2 weeks in a row? I don't think so. I think they're going to score enough here to stay within the number. And, yeah, and also, aren't they maybe just due to cover a number? I think it's been, you know, I don't have it in front of me. Unfortunately, the database down that I use, that's timely, but I think it's something like I know they haven't covered at least the last three meetings with New England. Now the regular season meeting this year didn't have Ben Roethlisberger, and they still kind of played New England surprisingly tough for 3.5 quarters with Landry Jones, only lost the game 27-16. And if I remember, New England tacked one on late to get the cover in that game. So I think with Big Ben, who, by the way, all that deal that we made about his ankle and the walking boot going into the Chiefs game didn't seem like it mattered, did it? Pittsburgh, like Atlanta, in my opinion, are the only two teams that made the playoffs this year that you could make the case underachieved in terms of win-loss record. New England, you talked about that strength of schedule, and Pittsburgh's, remember, would probably be better if not for the fact that they played the Browns. Now, it's glass half full, glass half empty thing. They play the Browns twice, so we're going to weigh down that metric because the Browns are obviously the worst
team
in the league. So I don't know. New England has been the best team in the league all year,
But I wouldn't want to lay points against this Pittsburgh Steelers offense.
Here's the thing. I look at it somewhat differently as we look back at last week, because both teams, particularly when you're looking at the offenses, you look at it and you say, and particularly the first half of the game with New England and Houston, and again, my gut feeling of I thought the Patriots would either have the cover salted away or that they would be in a lot of trouble going into the fourth quarter. Boy, was I wrong, because that was a sweat the whole way through on the cover. I was completely wrong on that.
And Houston had the ball. It was the exact thing I said. I said Houston's going to have the ball late, and if you bet the Patriots, you're going to be cursed with the TD.
Well, I couldn't put my finger on it. It was just a gut feeling, but yeah, I texted you at the time, and I admitted that. But here's the thing, particularly when you look at the first half, an awful game offensively for New England by their standards. They put up 34.
Yes.
You look at Pittsburgh. I believe that's the first time ever in the playoffs a team has lost the touchdown battle 2-0 and won the game. So let's not get too carried away with ourselves here when we talk about how much Pittsburgh offensively dominated the Kansas City Chiefs, who did manage to
do
Pittsburgh never did, cross the goal line and get 6 points. So I look at that, and I say, there was New England on an off week putting up 34. There was Pittsburgh on an off week struggling to put up 18. I think New England's got more room to improve off of last week based on what we saw of the two offenses, quite frankly.
See, I disagree. They outgained Kansas City. They outgained Kansas City 389-227. And, like, to me, they moved the ball. It just they settled for field goals is what it was. I mean, they had 6 good drives in that game. And, I think New England's offense, Pittsburgh's offense, I think them scoring 18 points was not representative of what they did at all. I think it was a gross underachievement because, they moved the ball pretty easily and just completely looked like the better team last week. So, I mean, New England did, obviously. I mean, it was a case of the only reason either game was close. New England had some self-inflicted mistakes against Houston. Brady, uncharacteristically, I think, threw 2 interceptions, which you just don't see often. And then Pittsburgh settled for field goals. In my opinion, both teams were clearly the better one on the field last weekend.
Well, Kyle, I've never seen the Lombardi Trophy up close, so I'm just postulating here. I'm just spitballing off the top of my head. But I would bet any amount of money there's no inscription on the Lombardi Trophy that says nobody got it done better between the 20s. So,
I mean, yeah, they're not going to beat New England only getting field goals. They're not. But I think their ability to move the ball on what was a well-regarded defense means something. Yes, they settled for field goals, but red zone efficiency is very volatile. I mean, because they did that earlier in the year. Pittsburgh against, like, Cincinnati, they kicked a bunch of field goals. And the next game, they scored a bunch of touchdowns. So, I don't know. And New England, like I said, they only give up, like, 16 points per game. But, the amount of yardage they give up doesn't really translate to that. So, I look for a breakthrough, possibly, with Pittsburgh's offense, which I regard Pittsburgh's offense as the best in the league. Besides Atlanta.
Well,
when you have Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown, I mean, you can beat anyone on any Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that, in terms of one thing you said there to go pick at it, I mean, not to go Pocahontas in a Betsy DeVos confirmation hearing on you, but as far as what you said about Kansas City's defense being well regarded. Okay. Well, Kyle, you never regarded Kansas City's defense that highly. So to say, they did it on a well-regarded defense, is that a little bit of revisionism after the fact? Because you never thought they were that great.
No, I didn't. But, I mean, everyone else did. I was in the minority. Maybe I was wrong. See, I'm not like you. I'm not a bitter clinger. I'll admit, hey, maybe I was wrong. I just think, I watched that full, like, there is no way you can tell me that, like, I don't give a shit that the score was 18 to 16?
16, yeah.
Was the final score? That game was never close. At no point did I think the Kansas City Chiefs were going to win that game. No. Even when they were winning.
I mean, if it hadn't been for that joke completely call on the 2-point PAT,
oh my God.
That joke of a call, We're going in overtime. And then what happens? You know what I mean?
It
happens for the refs
classic.
Taking matters into their own hands. The Rooneys, the fair-haired boys of the NFL, getting the call once again.
Oh, my God.
You know, shades of the Super Bowl against Seattle.
Oh, my God. You are the most classic see-what-you-want guy I've ever heard. Like, I literally had a ticket needed Kansas City for my day, and I'm like, what? And you're like, touching me, big flop. Like, what are you talking about, he flop? The guy dragged him to the ground.
You were the most classic see-what-you-want guy I've ever known. I'm so pulling that out and using it for a soundbite for the show, Kyle. Thank you for that.
You are. You just see what you want. I don't give a damn if you're talking about Pittsburgh's defense or this atrocity with Dean Ambrose storyline. I mean, you just see what you want. I don't even know what you're talking about half the time. Give me the Steelers.
Neither does anybody else, quite frankly.
Give me Pittsburgh. Give me Pittsburgh. That's like the worst take, too.
Well, that's pretty much what I think of them. But unlike you, I don't think there's going to be a cloud of celebratory Pall Mall smoke over the double wides in Western PA this weekend, Kyle. I could be wrong, but I have yet to be in picking New England to go over them as they have the last couple of times here. So
well,
I believe that once
again.
They
can always cover and not win. They can always cover and not win, and I'd be right. And
that's true.
It would still be the Pall Mall or whatever the hell you're talking about.
Well, that is one possible outcome. I mean, again, I got the points in the other game here as well. So while I'm the bitter clinger that's staying with Packers-Patriots for the Super Bowl, I could end up hitting on the NFC game without Green Bay winning because that's how I'm doing it there. So you and I, interestingly, are splitting on these games here this weekend. Of course, I'm going with Green Bay-New England, the Super Bowl rematch from 20 years ago. You are going with Atlanta-Pittsburgh, which would be a first Super Bowl between these two teams here. So, again, it will be a lot of fun, a lot of excitement on Championship Sunday, as it always is. Great matchups. It's great that we're not plagued with, again, those couple of years that the Steelers, when they didn't have to get by the Patriots, like when the Jets joked their way in with, like, Mark Sanchez. And I was like, oh, great. Here's the designated fall team for the Steelers. You know what I mean? At least we got two great games here this weekend where there is that amount of doubt going in.
Yeah, I really think they're two toss-up games, and if we come back to do the Super Bowl preview, and I went 0-2 on Championship Sunday, I'll be honest with you, won't be surprised. However, I will be in a new place when I do it. It'll be the first ever time that I broadcast from my new home when we do the Super Bowl. So I'm looking forward to that.
Everybody's getting new digs. You guys, the Obamas, everybody's getting new digs right about now.
I'll tell you what. If the Obamas are the first family, you know, by God, we have to be the second. What a classy group of couples you're talking about there. Nice liberal standard bearers for America.
That's easily funnier than anything I've said today. But
Nice standard bears. The Obamas and the Rosses. Yes, still trying to keep the faith, like Bon Jovi said. We're fucked. We are fucked. And by the way, we should even say there won't even be a Super Bowl preview show probably because we're all going to be dead tomorrow. So what am I talking about? We should go through it now, Ricky. When the world's finally able to get back online in 6 years. Maybe they'll uncover this mini episode. Who do you got in the Super Bowl? Let's get this pick out of the way in case of Armageddon.
Green Bay over New England. I'm going to bitter cling Green Bay over New England. Who do you got?
I'll just take it because I don't know if – I mean, obviously the points is kind of small with Pittsburgh and New England, but I'm not guaranteeing a straight-up winner there, but I am guaranteeing Atlanta wins trip. I'll just take Atlanta. Fuck it. The Atlanta Falcons have won Super Bowl 51.
Well, when future archaeologists dig this out over the electromagnetic pulse attack that Kyle Ross thinks is coming, they will uncover what we thought of Super Bowl 51. Meanwhile, I am a cockeyed optimist, feeling that we will be able to do this on schedule before Super Bowl 51 here. So once this Championship Sunday has made football great again, Kyle Ross, we'll be back to break down the Super Bowl.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.